Hi, Dan.
Hello, Jason.
Oh, hello. Welcome back.
Hello. Welcome. I'm back.
Welcome back from Seattle, where you broke your Apple Watch, apparently.
Well, fun times in travel. Yeah. Last full day of my trip. I recounted this story over on The Rebound this week as well. But yeah, it was a weird confluence of events where my wife's had trouble charging her iPhone. She has an 8. The battery health is basically shot on that thing. Uh-huh. And when she has one of those MagSafe Duo chargers I bought her as a travel charger, which is very convenient, if very expensive. You can sometimes find them on deals. But when she leaves her phone to charge on the pad, because it doesn't have MagSafe, it only has Qi charging for her because it's an iPhone 8, it does not reliably charge. She will sometimes pick it up in the morning and it is not fully charged, even though it has been charging, because she needs to get the battery replaced, which is something actually, I have an ancillary story about that, but we'll discuss that in a second. She asked me to plug it in on my side where I just had a lightning cable. And I said, sure, you can put my phone on the MagSafe charger. No problem. And then she asked for the phone in the morning and I went to hand it over and the Apple Watch was precariously bounced next to it. And I knocked it off the nightstand onto a tile floor. It did not survive. I mean, it still seems to turn on and stuff, but the screen was severely
smashed.
Cracked. Yeah. So I mourned it for a little while. This is my Series 4.
Yep.
And then immediately was like, well, I guess I'm buying a new Apple Watch. easy decision to make.
And when in Seattle, why not go to the University Village Apple Store?
Indeed, which is a lovely little store there.
Yeah, I've been there.
Nice place. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I popped in. I ordered one to pick up. I popped in. I was in and out. So we actually figured what had happened was we were supposed to fly back on Monday morning. Our flight was delayed or canceled, and then we switched to a different flight, which was that evening, and then that flight was delayed. So we basically did not leave Seattle until midnight on Monday, which was not super fun. But we had the day to kick around, and so we was like, well, we'll go to the Apple Store. I'll pick up my watch, and maybe they can replace the battery on my wife's phone. As it turned out, getting the watch was pretty easy. However, they did not have the batteries for the iPhone 8 in stock. And my wife was like, the guy I talked to seemed very surprised about that. I was like, supply chain, you don't say. So she was not able to replace her battery, which was a bummer. And then I had, as I rode up for Six Colors, a bit of a time trying to migrate my Apple Watch over. Which I was frankly shocked at, because as I put in the piece, Apple got pretty good at this with the phone, because there were a couple incidents where they released updates to an iOS, like a big fall iOS release, where like a point update came out. I think it might have been 2 years ago when the iPhone shipped in like October, because it was late in 2020, I think. And so they released like a 15.0 something, 14.0, I don't remember, whatever it was. It was a point release, but it arrived before the phones showed up. So all the phones had old software on them and immediately needed to be updated. And the problem with that was, if you were restoring from a phone that you currently had, which you had updated to that newer version of the OS on the shipping phone was out of date. And so they made their migration system, which has improved vastly over the years, would like prompt you like, hey, before you can restore this, we need to update the phone.
Right.
Great. Easy. But the watch doesn't do this for some reason, which baffles me.
No,
and not only that, but as I wrote in my piece, it doesn't even... I had unpaired my watch, so I knew, like, all right, I got to unpair it so it has the backup on the phone. And then when I get the new watch, I'll just grab the backup. But it didn't even tell me about that backup, because it didn't see it as valid, because it was too new.
This is a huge UI problem.
It's
where
bad.
It should know that you have a backup, but it's made with a more recent model, or, you know, more recent version,
and then
prompt
update.
You to do what it does on the iPhone, prompt you to update to that version, and then restore the backup. Yeah. And instead, it's like, no, I don't know, Dan. It's been years since you ran this OS version.
Right. It's literally been, I think the last backup on there was probably from the last time I migrated to like the Series 4, because it was literally from 2018, I think. And I was like, wait, but I know I unpaired it, you know, and like that it backed up and all of that. And I was baffled at how bad it was. I had to go to Google and be like, so what do I need to do here? And the answer turns out to be pair the new watch, set it up as a new watch, update the software, unpair it, repair it and then restore from the backup, which it will now see. And you sit there thinking, like, I know that some of this stuff is weird because the phone is kind of bootstrapping the watch, but this system should be much better. So
maybe they will improve that experience for the next OS round.
Yeah, and it was especially frustrating for me because we were sort of wandering out and about that day. I didn't have a consistent Wi-Fi connection, so like grabbing the update is very slow, and it needs to be connected to a charger. So I had it like in my backpack connected to my MacBook, which was just asleep, so it was actually charging because I have a the new cable that comes with the watch is USB-C. And I don't have like a battery thing that has a USB-C port on it. So I had to plug it in to my MacBook. Mm. So that was fun. And it worked. I eventually got there like 10 hours later. And, you know, I talked to some of the other people really, why didn't you, you know, at this point I would have just given up and set it up as a new watch. I was like, no, I knew the backup was there. Like, it had all my stuff on it. I didn't want to have to go through and set up all my watch faces again or whatever.
Never have to do that.
Yeah. So anyways, that I was very surprised that system is not better. I hope that they're improving it. I did see as I was searching about and doing some research today that the latest version of the Watch OS betas provide a way to restore like a bricked Apple Watch from your phone. Hmm. So who knows? Maybe they're streamlining that process and it'll be better in, like as you said, in Watch OS 9. But yep, there you go. That was a fun time.
Huh.
What a way to end a vacation.
That is,
but you
got a story out of it,
and a fancy new Apple Watch. So
and a new Apple Watch. So yeah. I like that the photo you had on your post is saying that this very podcast is going to be recorded later.
I got
saw
have
that picture
calendar.
And said, "Hey, that's us.
That's coming up." Yeah, I got a blue one, which I thought was a bit of a bold choice, but I really. Did not like the look of midnight. I'm a space gray Apple Watch owner, and I didn't like midnight. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to go blue. I think blue is a nice color.
It's pretty. That was my review sample from Apple was a blue one. It was really nice. Mm-hmm. I liked it a lot. Yeah, and so, I have the blue iPhone mini, so I definitely thought about it, but I ended up going with a black one. But it looks good. Looks good.
Yeah. I'm going to try not to break this one.
Try not to. Something about traveling too. I broke an iPad on traveling too. It's like an
unusual
place.
You're not in your
place.
Space. Yeah, exactly. And like you're jury rigging. Like I've got like one of those, you know, bricks that plugs into the wall and has like four USB-A ports on it. And like where the plugs are, it was not super close to the nightstand. So the cables were kind of stretched across. And you're like, all that stuff. You're like, I don't have my nice charging stand. And
I know. And then something like this happens.
I know. And you think I'll never travel again.
Did you get to see... I haven't listened to the podcast. Did you get to see John Maltz?
I did get to see John Maltz. Went to lunch with John Maltz. Recorded a podcast with John Maltz, as is the way when any two podcasters are together in the same location.
They have to record
a
podcast.
They must record a podcast. Yeah.
I guess it's a rule or something.
It's a rule. It's a law. Yeah. So that was great. It was nice to catch up with him. I caught up with a few other friends. I got a high school friend who's out in Seattle who's had a kid during the pandemic who I hadn't met yet. In fact, like because they've been so swamped in, you know, pandemic, et cetera, they haven't even like taken the kid back to East to meet any of like the grandparents or family yet. So it was really nice to catch up with him because I hadn't seen him since my wedding, I think. And then I had another friend who's a writer friend who lives in the Seattle area who I got to see, which was really great as well. It was just a super pleasant opportunity to catch up with people and then went to a national park, got to do a little bit of a hike and that kind of stuff.
Did you get bit by any shiny, glowy vampires while you were out there?
You know, it was surprisingly sunny. I have a picture that I tried to post to our incomparable Slack of my wife standing in front of the Welcome to Forks, Washington sign with giant, like, it just blaring sun in the background.
Yeah.
But because the connection was so bad up there, it's literally stuck in my Slack client on my phone. Like, it shows the picture as, like, constantly uploading, and I can't delete it, and I can't get... And I was like, all right, it's stuck there forever.
Yep, stuck in Forks. So, really, the vampire got the photo. That's what happened.
That's right.
The vampire is now on the 5G. That's 5G vampires. That's the thing they don't tell you.
They're so fast. Yeah. You know, it's creepy.
Well, but. Yeah. And the G stands for glowing because it's twilight. Anyway, well, welcome back. I was in Arizona for most of this week. So, you know, I visiting my mom. So I wasn't like there's nobody minding the store, I guess, is what I'm saying. So people yes, could just walk quiet. Right in and stole the stuff. But
stolen our valuable content.
Yeah. Shame on them. We did. However, you and I did simultaneously write posts about the iPod being discontinued.
That's true.
Mine was snarkier than yours. So I know, you got yours up there. Fine. It's fine.
I feel bad about it because I wrote it. When was that? Tuesday morning?
Yeah.
And I was like super jet lagged. And I had that moment as I was finishing the post where it's like, oh, maybe this should have been more of a like a shtick where I did like an obit or something.
Yeah.
And I was so tired and I was like, you know what? I'm just, I don't have the mental energy to do this. And then I publish it. And then you're like, oh, it was working awesome. Well, it's like, oh, I'm really sorry. I just didn't, I didn't even like, my brain was not working very well.
Yeah. I mean, I did mine literally sitting on the couch at my mom's house on my iPad touch screen only. Like, I mean, it was not exactly heavy duty.
Not a speed typing experience.
Work,
sure.
But I managed it. That's, yeah. Anyway, the iPod. I think it's funny because it's the iPod Touch. Like, we can say RIP to the name iPod, but the truth is it's when the iPod Classic got discontinued that the real iPod got discontinued. iPod Touch was always not really an iPod. I'm sorry.
It's an iPhone. It's an
Come
iPhone.
At me, iPod Touch fans. I'm not saying that it isn't a fine product, I guess, but it was just an iPhone without cellular, whereas the real iPod died a couple years ago, I don't remember when they finally
longer. I didn't remember
what's weird about it, and the thing that I was riffing on that a bunch of other people did too is the fact that Apple's press release discontinuing the iPod Touch is not about the iPod Touch, it's about the history of the iPod, and only says in passing that the iPod Touch is available while supplies last. They can't even bear to say that it's discontinued. I get the idea of the positive spin, and I appreciate the fact that they went to a lot of trouble to get like images of classic iPods and all of that, but like everybody knows what you're doing. Why don't you just say it? And they can't say it. It's not even a defeat. It's not even like a PR problem. Something like this. It's like it's the end of a product life cycle.
Yeah,
and I still can't bear to say the words. I just don't get it.
It was a very weird post. We talked about it on The Rebound. And John Moltz was the defender. And Lex and I were both like, no, this post is bananas. Because in some ways you could have like swapped out a couple words. And it could have just been about like the HomePod. I don't know. It didn't really matter, right? Like it was not at all about the iPod until like the last sentence. Kind of burying the lead. I like in my head I rewrote it. Like you could just stick one line in at that first paragraph.
Yeah.
Like, you know, oh, and today we're discontinuing the iPod Touch, but the iPod experience lives on, you know, and you're like, great, fine. Yeah. That would have been easy. But it is such a strange choice.
Yeah, it's just let's promote all the ways that we do music now and then talk about how great the iPod was, and iPod is still available while supplies last.
And iPod Touch has been taken out and shot.
I mean, I guess I don't know. I'm still thinking about like what to liken it to. I kept coming back to like a funeral where they never mentioned that the person died. Where it's like, hey, everybody, thanks for coming. I want to talk about Gary. You know, right?
Celebrate the life of Gary.
Yeah, yeah, we're like, going to talk about Gary.
Is Gary here? Where is Gary?
And then the last line is, and Gary is available for a limited time in that coffin.
Like, yeah, say your goodbyes while you can.
I mean, and on one level, that's right. You are celebrating the life of the iPod, and I get that. But you know, I don't know. I feel like you need to admit that there's a dead body in a coffin, or there's an urn, or there's right like something. It's weird. I think
Jobs
would have
come out with a coffin with the iPod in it, right?
I mean, I think they did a good job given what it is. I appreciate that they did the extra effort here. I just find it almost pathological of their like inability to talk about a product being discontinued, that they see it as a failure or something. And I don't see how that, or as bad news. And like, well, first off, every single person who writes about this is going to say Apple discontinues the iPod, right? So you can't change the narrative. So you just deny the narrative. It's so weird. Anyway, it's just, yeah, it's bizarre. It's bizarre.
I would love to be a fly on the wall in that conversation where somebody has written maybe a press release that actually says it, and then somebody higher up's like, do we have to, no, can we take that line out?
Let's just emphasize the few. It actually reminds me that I say it's pathological. I would also say this is a Steve Jobs culture thing. Because Steve Jobs was always like, never talk about the past, only talk about what's going on now. And so you follow that through, and it's like, when a product is discontinued, you literally don't talk about the product. You talk about all the great things that do what that product used to do, and still do, and that you can buy, because in the end, what we're here to do is sell product. And I think it's, I get it, because it's PR. All you are in it is to sell product. But I think it's weird not to use... Not to own up to the discontinuation of it. I don't know. It's strange. Which it is a very Apple thing to do. Very Apple.
Which is the there was a Soviet premier who like basically died and the Kremlin like didn't acknowledge it. I think it like several
Yuri
days
Andropov,
later. Or something.
Was Andropov? Like, that's what I was thinking. Very bad cold.
Yeah, exactly. It just kept getting worse. No. He's on the mend.
Well, that was, I was reading a story. While I was in Arizona, about somebody alleging, with, you know, probably not accurately, but somebody, there's a rumor going around, let's put it that way, in Russia that Putin has a,
yes, I saw this,
a fatal disease, which, I mean, I think it's wishful thinking, but what made me laugh is somebody said, you know, you got to follow the old Soviet rule, which is nobody's really sick until the official denial is released. Then when they deny that they're sick, you're like, oh no, they're sick.
It's like, yeah, it's like the old joke about the guy who comes home and he's like, cat is dead, and his brother was supposed to be watching the cat, and he's like, yeah, I got bad news for you, the cat died. He goes, no, you should have been breaking me in easy, right? You called me like, oh, the cat's up on the roof. No, that's no good. Hold on, I'm gonna try to get the cat down. Oh no, the cat's down. He's like, and then the punchline is something like, and how's mom doing? Well, she's up on the roof, you know.
Yeah. Anyway, the iPod is up on the roof. The iPod Classic is the real iPod, though, and they already discontinued that. And I still have one in my car.
Yeah,
an iPod, a classic. It's not. I don't think it's even a classic. It's a previous generation. You know, still the white plastic.
Oh yeah, like
that's in there with all of the MP3 things. But the truth is that the classic iPod became irrelevant for a lot of people and for Apple strategy very quickly because it never supported Apple Music.
Mm-hmm.
And I still think, I know Federico talked about this a little bit on Connected a few weeks ago. There's a product that Apple could make that was a more dedicated kind of Apple Music player that they could call an iPod. But at this point, it would basically need to run iOS, and it would need to be... because it would need to support Apple Music, and it would need to, you need to be able to load stuff on it, and that's basically an iPod Touch essentially, except you could like upgrade the audio quality and the audio out and stuff like that. But the truth is, I don't think there's a market.
No,
I don't think there's a market for a music player now because all of our devices are music players. The Playdate is a music player if you want it to be. Right. Like everything
there was
is a music
something
player.
Something a couple of weeks ago where like Sony released a new Walkman MP3 player.
Yeah.
And I was like, what
Federico,
are you doing?
Federico has a Walkman and it's it does FLAC and you know, and that's the thing is that you can do all these high things, but Apple
product.
Is putting those things into all their products now.
Right, exactly. Why would you say this is the best experience, but you can only get it on this device as opposed to all like the devices everybody else is buying?
Exactly.
Like they're so pro audio quality. They talk up the AirPods, and
yes,
the AirPod Max, and all of that. And it's like,
oh no,
you'd never.
Dan, we turned into the first part of the iPod press release. We just did it. We did it. Yeah, but it's true. I mean, they're not lying. It is in all their products. And going forward, you know, they are focusing on multi-channel audio and audio quality and lossless, and all of those things are things that Apple wants to be part of its brand promise for audio, even if some of them are kind of not something people care about. It's part of them already. So you don't need to dedicate any product to it. It's all the products.
Yeah, a standalone product. I mean, that iPod would essentially be, the analogy would be a HomePod, which, as we just talked about a couple weeks ago, is like, it's a niche product. There's people who really love that niche, but it's a niche, right? It's the same thing with a standalone MP3 player. Yeah, there's probably some people who'd be really on board for that, but that product is such a small market that there's
no reason
for them to make it. Yes.
And Apple Apple knows if you're going to spend that money, it just, you know, you spend it on an iPhone and you'll get it all. And they see more value in saying, look, you get this on your iPhone and your Apple TV and your laptop and, you know, all of these things. We are doing as much as we can for the music experience. And that's why that's in there. Anyway, RIP to the iPod.
I never owned a iPod Touch. Never had one.
I never owned one.
But it never made sense for what... I mean, I had an iPhone from day one, so it never made sense for me
they
to
were
also have an iPod
surprisingly
Touch.
Thin. I mean, that's the one thing that I always remembered about them is how thin they were, especially in the earlier days of the iPhone where the iPhone was even thicker. Yep. Oh, they were good. A lot of people got them as kids, you know, because they couldn't get a... That was something that struck me about, speaking of connected, this week's episode, they rank the iPods, and I thought it was funny because those guys are young enough that they're really... Like, I covered the iPod. So I think of it as products I covered. And they have all these nostalgic, like, oh, I got that when I was a kid. Like, Stephen Hackett, who is a very reasonable human being, has this love of the third generation iPod, classic iPod, which was terrible.
The buttons.
Yeah.
The touch buttons?
Yeah.
No,
It's terrible.
Steven.
But he loves
it. I'm talking to you.
And the reason he loves it is because he had one and he has fond memories of it. And I get it. I just thought it really struck me while they were talking about it that it is a very different thing when it's a thing that makes an impression on you as a person who is, a kid and you finally get this Apple, the precious Apple device and you fall in love with it than it is where it's like, well, another iPod came out. Time to write another review, and it's very businesslike, which is my experience with the iPod. And I love the iPod. I was thinking about it. It was really a small amount of time. I probably had an iPod in my backpack between home and work for only 7 years or something like that. Small amount of time before it was replaced by an iPhone. Yep. But I did, and I loved it.
It's a weird window for me. I mean, I had an original iPod, and it was a Christmas present the year it came out. And I love that thing. It was fantastic. And it basically lasted, I think, 4 or 5 years. And I had to replace it because it died. And I got one of the ones you were talking about, the white one with the virtual clicker, not the virtual, but the touch click wheel on it, which was also very good. And I think what's funny is the reason I ended up replacing it was I traded in, I needed to get that new one because my job when I started at Macworld, one of my first gigs was reviewing iPhone cases for Dan Frakes. And boy, that was the worst.
Yeah.
Because you would just get a million cases. And after you'd written up like the 30th or 40th one, you'd be like, dear God, what is there to say? It's a case.
Yeah.
It has holes for these buttons and these buttons, and you can see the screen.
In those days, that was definitely a big...
I quickly transitioned from the someone who got it as... And I was, 21 or something when I got it. So I was an adult. It wasn't a thing I got as a kid. But I quickly transitioned into a thing where I saw it more as a product I was writing about or reviewing things connected to.
And it just changes your perspective. And like if you're Stephen Hackett, you get that iPod and you're like, oh my God, the iPod is so amazing, right? Because it's the iPod experience, the whole thing is what you're reacting to. Whereas I look at that and I'm like, I don't know, the click wheel worked better. These buttons are really bad. And my memory of that, because I also have my personal memories of that, my memory of that one is trying to navigate it in the dark or just by feel. It wasn't even because they lit up, but by feel while I was putting my kids to bed. And you can't navigate it by feel because if you touch the button, it does whatever the button is. Yeah, so you can't feel around for the buttons. It's so bad. And it immediately was changed back. But, Stevens rolled all of his kind of fondness for the iPod, which I get, into this one that he had, which was, as somebody who had all of them, right, who would go through and get the new one every time and analyze it and write about it and all of that, it was the worst of those first five iPods, but it was his, and so he has a love for it, and it's just like his love is genuine. He's not wrong he's wrong, but he's not wrong in that way. But it's just his perspective is completely different from the if this is your job, right? And most people are not gonna spend a lot of are not gonna buy every single iPod and use every single iPod and form an opinion about it, right? That's a weird thing, but that's our job, so we do that.
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of fondness for the Mac LC, which was my first Mac, which is not a great Mac.
It's a bad.
I have much less fondness for my Performa 6300, which was the Mac I got after that, which was terrible even at the time. So, you know, the LC was bad, but, you know, managed to limp along. But yeah, I understand that feeling. It's the one, like you said, it's the one thing you have, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I came from a household where we only had one computer at a time, and you got a new one because the old one broke.
Yeah.
And, you know,
years
more or less.
Later.
Yeah, exactly. And so.
Like an Apple Watch.
Sure. For example,
it breaks, and I guess it's time to get the new one now.
Yeah, I'm much less precious about it than I think I used to be. I mean, especially the phones, right? Like, I feel like now I hardly have time to get attached to an iPhone because it's a year, and then I get a new one, and I don't really have the fondness for it that I had for another product. It's not as emotional a connection, especially because they start to blur together, right? Like, if you ask me now, like, what the difference between the iPhone 13 and the iPhone 11 or 10 was, it's like, all right, I gotta think about it a bit. But, like, especially since the 10 redesign, you know, they all kind of look the same. Slightly different edges, slightly different colors, et cetera, but, like, they kind of blur together. But that's fine. I mean, it's a product, right? It's not what the product is, it's what it does, and that's more sort of what connects with me. I will say I do have a few old iPods on the shelf behind me, mostly ones I think that I got from Macworld to review stuff. Mm-hmm. And
I'm gonna need those back, Dan.
Yeah, you want me to send those back to the office?
yeah send them back.
I'll ship them back. I don't have too many, they're mostly Nanos, but I have a lot of fondness for, I think it was the second generation Nano. It's whatever. So the first Nano came out to kill the Mini, and it was black or white, and it was like the thin stick.
Yeah, and it was that shiny plastic that coating had scratched.
Scratched, yeah. And I think the next one after that was aluminum, and it was in color.
Yeah.
That one was nice. I think that's my favorite sort of Nano, is like, it was just so cool. It was colorful. It was easy to stick in your pocket. The fact that it was so light compared to the huge, you know, clunky, by comparison, hard drive driven iPod,
yeah.
Like, even though you can only fit less music on it.
I was thinking of trying to explain to somebody who hasn't experienced it the difference between the iPod and the Nano, or even the Mini, the hard drive ones and the no hard drive ones, where, like, and especially the early hard drive ones, you press play and, like, the hard drive spins up sometimes, and then it starts to buffer it, and it's like, it's this whole thing. And that Nano, you press play, and it was just like, boop, and it was instantaneous. Yeah. And now everything is like that, but, like, at the time, to not have the weight and not have the vibration of the hard drive and have it be instant was like, oh, yeah, this is what it is, right? Like, it was that moment of like, no, this is how you need to do this. They used to talk for the hard drives, they talked about skip protection. And what was skip protection?
A record.
Like a CD, right? Because you couldn't.
CD, yeah.
CD, you have to buffer because there would be jostling. And so for the hard drive on an iPod, you had skip protection. It really just meant that they loaded as much of the song as they could into a buffer, and then they spun down the hard drive. But then the Nano comes out, and it's just infinite skip protection. There's no such thing as skip.
Yeah. Because I mean, that's the moment you knew that's where this was going. I mean, it really was a huge deal. I mean, I do think back too to when I was in college before I got the iPod. I had a Discman, you know, CD, portable CD player, and I worked at the library for a while, and I was like reshelving books, and I had one of those trolleys, you know, had a bunch of books on it, whatever, and I'm like rolling it along, and for whatever reason, I remember the headphones I had at that point had just a very long cable, and they definitely got like caught under the wheel, and the Discman flew off the trolley, flipped over, hit the eject button, and then shot the CD like another 10 feet out of it. And I was just like standing there frozen, like, oh no. And it sort of worked after that, but it was never really the same again. So
I also put in a word for one more iPod Nano, which is the one that nobody likes, which is the square Nano, which is whatever, the fourth generation. And I get why people don't like it, because it was a weirder shape than all the other Nanos. It was more like a shrunken down iPod Classic.
Yep.
I get all of that. But I liked it. And what nobody wants to talk about is that it was really great for video. Mm-hmm. I know it was a tiny screen, but it was this little...
It was much larger than the previous ones.
And it was a little video player. And my kids, whatever age they were when that thing came out, like, I put that in a case because they were going to destroy it otherwise, and loaded it up with TV shows for car trips. It was the best. So again, I'm getting my personal feelings involved here, but like, I loved that there was a smaller video player with better battery life, I believe, iPod at that point. That it wasn't just the big honking video iPod, but that you could get a Nano and it played and video while you could hold it with the controls. I think later Nanos, you could lay them on their side, basically.
Oh, yeah.
And watch video that way. But anyway, I'll put in a word for that. Nobody else needs to like it, but I appreciated that as a mini video iPod. I thought it was great.
I think Micah talked up his love for the I think it was the last Nano.
The fake clip. iOS.
Yeah, yeah. And I was like, that was a weird one. That was a weird device.
I have no fondness.
It killed the Nano. I think the thing that was funny about it was that it was sort of presaged the Apple Watch, right? Because people would like get watch bands for it or like ways to clip it onto a thing that went around their wrist. I mean, it was big and clunky and all that, but it clearly was like the moment where you're like, oh yeah, watch. Maybe that's gonna happen.
And they wanted it to be like almost like a shuffle. With a screen.
Right, with a touch screen.
Because it had a clip and all of that.
But, yeah, that was the physical controls were great.
I miss all that stuff, but it's all been superseded, right? Like, I was thinking about this the other day about I love the iPod Shuffle. I love the iPod Shuffle. I would put podcasts on it at one point, but I put music on it and use it to like mow the lawn or something like that. Yep. You just clip it on, go out there, you're listening to music. It's great. Couldn't be better. So easy. I had a silver iPod Shuffle. I used it all the time. I loved it. My father-in-law, until very recently, used an iPod Shuffle for all of his, he does like long bike rides and stuff, like 100-mile bike rides and things like that, 40-mile, 50, 70-mile, just a lot. He's still out there doing it, and he would use an iPod Shuffle for that too. Like I have a great fondness for it. And I was thinking about it though, and the fact is, what do I do now when I mow the lawn? Is I stream audio to AirPods from my Apple Watch.
Yeah, right.
My Apple Watch is an iPod Shuffle on my wrist, in a way, right? Except it's more like that Nano because it's got the touch control on it, and it's just it's great to have that nostalgia for the amazing way that the way we consume audio has transformed. But in the end, the iPod is a transitional step, not a final form. That's just it.
Right. Yep. Exactly. The world has moved on.
Yeah. Yes. Aren't we all a transitional step, Dan? And in fact, Gary off in the corner has transitioned himself. But Gary will be available while supplies last. That's what I'm saying.
Get your Gary while you can.
Once the casket closes, that's it for Gary.
That's it.
So
goodbye.
One last thing before we go. I ran our podcast through Podcast Details. The web
I did this
app,
with some of mine, which were pretty hilarious.
And I just want to say we're killing it in terms of, especially when the pandemic hit, we really got on the train there. We released this thing. It puts up a little grid of when the episodes release. They're almost all, every week and on Friday, as they're supposed to be. Occasionally, there's a thing where one of us is going away, and I don't hold it for... We record Thursday. I don't hold it for Friday. I just post it on Thursday, and you can see those in there. And it's pretty amazing also our consistency in terms of it being basically every week. In 2021, we released 49 episodes, the only ones.
Wow.
We basically did a skip. It looks like in late summer, and we did a skip Christmas week.
Christmas, I was going to say.
And 2020, we did 51, and it looks like the only one we missed was last week, first week, basically.
Yep, sure.
I'm just saying... We are consistent.
Deliver.
Also, we didn't used to just be on Fridays. We used to be more randomly scattered.
Yes.
But and then in 2017, we were on Thursdays. I don't know. I was surprised.
It's fun to watch some of these things shift. Like I ran a few of my shows through it, and I think the one that made me laugh the most was Biff, because we kept moving it to cover whatever show would be on, because we didn't want to be in a scenario where it's like, we record a show and then the show episode we're talking about records like airs the next day, right? Like
right,
where
so
we staggered by 6 days. Yeah, so we kept like moving it and you can see the little like patterns as it's like it was on Tuesday, now it's on Thursday, now it's on Friday, and it's like, oh boy.
What Mike Hurley and I discovered was that Upgrade looks inconsistent. It looks like, wow, at the beginning we posted a lot of episodes on Tuesdays. Why is that? Turns out we used to record Upgrade, and I had just completely forgotten this. We used to record Upgrade at 11 a.m. my time, which is very late for Mike.
Right. Yeah.
But he had a job.
Sweet.
So he would get home from the job and we would record Upgrade at 11 a.m. because Upgrade started after I left IDG. So I could do it whenever. And then he would edit it and post it. And it was often posted after midnight GMT. And the RSS feed is in that time zone. So those are all marked as Tuesdays, even though they actually were Mondays, because it was just that. And I had forgotten that we recorded at 11. I had to go back in my calendar. And I was like, wow, all these upgrades are marked at 11 a.m. And then at some point he got, you know, he quit his job and was like, Jason, I cannot record that late anymore. And I'm like, all right, 9 a.m. And we've been there ever since. But consistency is super important in podcasts, and you know
the cool. Clockwise ones. It's got all the lengths, which are pretty consistent. Sometimes we undershoot. There's one episode that ever went over 30 minutes because it was actually a joke episode.
Yes.
Yep. But its days have also shifted. It was not always. So if you listen live, it's Wednesday. Noon. It has shifted a bit over the years, which I also didn't remember because I guess and there's a gap because it looks like we recorded one show in 2013.
Oh, because,
and then there's nothing, because the relay doesn't have all the IDG.
Yeah,
episodes.
I have the whole IDG thing as an RSS feed, and relay didn't want to import it because it would spew into everybody's podcast players
60 episodes or something,
which is I still would like to do that at some point because I would like to have the whole archive in there.
It is weird because it goes from we have the unaired pilot zero and then it jumps to basically when we move to relay in 2014 and nothing in between those. It's like oh, we had a great idea for a show, we're not going to do it for 3 years.
Well, if anybody wants to, they can go on the Relay website on the Clockwise page. There's a link down on the sidebar to the pre-Relay episodes RSS feed, and they're all there. You can subscribe, and if you want to listen to commentary about technology in 2014,
that is a time capsule.
It's there. I'm looking at it now. Pretty solid average duration, 29 minutes. And we were all over the place because we all had, I think looking at this, it looked like it was supposed to be Wednesdays, but sometimes people weren't available, so we would just do it whenever.
Yep.
Those were the days. Well,
Days are over, Jason. They are no longer available.
Nope.
Not even while supplies last.
No. Anyway, Gary would love that podcast.
Poor Gary.
Gary continues to love that podcast in limited quantities while supplies last. All right. We will be back. Unless we go the way of Gary, we will be back next Friday. Until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.